will not sacrifice the caribou, the polar bear, or the migratory birds for the sake of development.
The Senate Energy Committee passes a bill opening ANWR to oil drilling. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state finance director delivers a stark message to lawmakers about the budget.
You're more aware than I am that cutting the budget, constraining the budget, is easier said than done.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The U.S. Senate Energy Committee today approved legislation that would open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. Democrats tried repeatedly to kill or weaken the measure, but they failed to stop the advance of the drilling measure. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Good morning, everyone. The committee will come to order.
Senator Murkowski knew she had the votes. All of the Republicans on her committee favor drilling, and they are the majority. Still, Democrats put up a fight. They argued the measure, by mandating oil lease sales, would nullify environmental protections. They argued it would change the purpose of the refuge, from protecting wildlife to producing oil. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders took the long view, saying their grandchildren would hold them accountable for climate change.
What this committee should be doing, working with people all over the world, is saying, how do we transform our energy system away from fossil fuel, away from coal, oil, and gas, to sustainable energy?
Democratic Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico is an avid elk hunter. He focused on the porcupine caribou herd that uses the coast of the refuge as its calving ground. Heinrich proposed putting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service director in charge of deciding what actions would be detrimental to the herd.
And the question is, on a wildlife refuge, what comes first?
Yeah,
Does wildlife come first? You would think so from the name.
His amendment, like all of those proposed by Democrats, failed. Senator Maria Cantwell, the top Democrat on the committee, suggested Alaska's budget crisis was driving short-sighted decisions.
The notion that oil prices have fallen and a state has been over-reliant on oil does not mean that we should be destroying a wildlife refuge today.
Murkowski says America can have both oil production and wildlife on the same land.
We will not sacrifice the caribou, the polar bear, or the migratory birds for the sake of development. But we also recognize that that is not a choice that we face here.
In the end, the committee voted 13-10 to advance the proposal. Every Republican voted for drilling, and one Democrat crossed over. Watching from the back of the hearing room, Gwich'in leader Bernadette Dementiev was sad and angry. She says her people depend on the porcupine caribou herd, and the herd depends on the refuge.
We're not going to stop fighting. We can't. This is our way of life. This is everything that we know.
I know this is not the topic, but I just can't not talk about this issue. I'm sorry.
3,000 miles from Washington, Alaska Governor Bill Walker was positively giddy when he addressed the annual Resource Development Council conference in Anchorage after the committee vote. He said 13-10 was his new favorite number.
We're not across the finish line yet, but boy, today was a great day, and I cannot thank Senator Murkowski enough.
The Arctic drilling provision will now be merged with the Senate tax cut plan and put to a vote of the full Senate. That's likely to happen after Thanksgiving. Murkowski says she's sure there will be moves to drop the drilling section from the bill. With help from Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C.
ConocoPhillips announced today that its newest development on the North Slope is producing oil. The project, called 1H News, had to overcome several challenges. One was the type of oil. Conoco's Lisa Bruner says it's a harder to produce viscous oil.
The oil is heavier, and so it flows more slowly. And as cold as it is here, it's harder for the oil to flow than some of our other reservoirs.
Another challenge was economics. Conoco first announced the project in 2014, but it was put on hold after oil prices crashed.
Went back to the drawing board and kind of rolled up our sleeves and tried to figure out a way to reduce our costs to a point where it is economic. And it's economic, but it's not as competitive as some of the best things in our portfolio.
According to Conoco, the project cost about $400 million, $60 million less than the initial estimate. But Bruner says it's unlikely the company would greenlight the same project today. The development is in Conoco's Kuparuk oil field. Most of the company's most promising new projects are further west, in and around the National Petroleum Reserve. It's expected to produce about 8,000 barrels of oil per day. Alaska's Senate decided to end its work this special session without voting on a bill to tax income. Governor Bill Walker's administration says the tax is needed to close the gap between what the state spends and what it raises. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what senators heard about the long-term budget situation before they left Juneau.
Nonpartisan Legislative Finance Director David Teal used a computer model to forecast what will happen if the legislature doesn't act to close the budget gap. It wasn't pretty. The Constitutional Budget Reserve, that's a piggy bank the state has drawn from to balance the budget the last 5 years, would be gone next year. The permanent fund would lose a sixth of its value before its earnings reserve account, that's the state's other piggy bank, also would fall to zero in about 10 years.
Because you have these unplanned draws, the earnings reserve account is depleted or depleting by 27. You probably have a year left before that is also depleted.
After that, the only choices to cover nearly half of state government would be massive budget cuts or plundering the main body of the permanent fund. Teal says the projections are better under a Senate plan that draws from permanent fund earnings, but still forecasts problems. The state could compensate by cutting the rate of growth in spending, but Teal says that could be a challenge.
You're more aware than I am that cutting the budget or constraining the budget is easier said than done. I mean, it's very easy to sit here and say all you have to do is grow at half the rate of inflation, but when it comes to achieving that, you may find it far more difficult than simply saying it.
Governor Walker is seeking to shore up state finances with a 1.5% tax on income. The tax would be limited to twice the annual permanent fund dividend. But like with the separate income tax introduced by the House majority earlier this year, the Senate has been cool to the idea. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says the possibility of, quote, small steps to limit future spending, as well as the potential for permanent fund earnings to outpace projections, make it premature to consider the tax.
From my perspective, I feel a little bit held hostage to some of the revenue discussion that we have to have that before we act to use the interest that we're receiving in a sustainable way.
The tax would raise an estimated $320 million. That's roughly half of the projected budget gap over the next few years, if the legislature passed a plan to draw from permanent fund earnings. State Tax Director Ken Alper says the tax would help protect the permanent fund.
We view this bill as a form of insurance, as a backup plan just in case we run out of our other sources of money, that we're not in the relatively desperate straits of having to overdraw the permanent fund.
And State Revenue Commissioner Sheldon Fisher says the tax would reduce uncertainty in the state, which he says is stalling business investment.
I think it's prompting people to hold back in terms of economic activity, and I think it's critical as we think about this plan and think about the various options that are available to us to try to come up with a solution.
But that consensus remains elusive. Some senators say the state should wait to see if oil prices rise before considering the tax, and they expressed other reasons for holding off on acting now. Senators reviewed a chart that showed Alaskans have one of the lowest state and local tax burdens in the country. But Anchorage Republican Senator Natasha von Imhoff said they face other costs.
When you start adding the total cost of living in Alaska when it comes to transportation, when it comes to the cost of energy, particularly in the rural areas, and then the amount of health care that we pay, the cost of living is much higher than many states in the union.
The legislature could consider the tax bill during the next session, which begins in January. But differences over the proposal could make it difficult to reach an agreement in an election year. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Bristol Bay Native Corporation is opposed to the Pebble Mine, but the regional Alaska Native Corporation is not backing the ballot initiative known as Stand for Salmon. In a written statement, BBNC President and CEO Jason Matrokin said, in part, the corporation believes responsible resource development can take place in Bristol Bay. He also said any development needs to align with local opinion and can't threaten fisheries. BBNC does not support HB 199, sponsored by Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutes, or the Stand for Salmon initiative. Stand for Salmon's provisions might make Pebble impossible to permit, and two of its backers hail from Bristol Bay. Gayla Hoseth is a second chief with the Kirion tribe in Dillingham, and Brian Kraft operates the Alaska Sportsman Fishing Lodges nestled in east and west side headwaters. Supporters of the initiative say it will update salmon habitat protections codified in state law, giving salmon streams a higher priority. Critics say the initiative may make nearly every stream anadromous, unless proven otherwise, and could cripple all kinds of development. The heads of the Arctic Slope and Cook Inlet regional corporations published an op-ed during the Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention in Anchorage, calling on Alaskans to reject the ballot initiative, saying it threatened jobs and development on Native lands. Stand for Salmon organizers are looking to collect enough signatures to certify it for next year's ballot. The Walker administration does not believe it is constitutional. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage residents work to protect urban birding.
Part of the ambiance is that there's not somebody's house here. You know, you're coming in and it's this wooded, marshy environment rather than development.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Going without health insurance could be financially devastating. Healthcare bills are the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is November 1st through December 15th. A household of four with an annual income of less than $123,000 may qualify for federal tax credits to help cover premium costs. Get signed up for health insurance at healthcare.gov today. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
The use of unmanned aircraft systems, or drones, by the Haines Borough has raised concerns about privacy and local government overreach. At a recent assembly meeting, residents and representatives pushed back on the use of the technology as a routine tool for government. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
Some of us moved up here to get away from government encroachment in our lives.
That's Haines resident Judy Rogers.
We don't want to have to worry about a government that's with a drone looking over our shoulders and listening to what we have to say.
Rogers wasn't alone in her opposition to the local government's use of drones. Ryan Cook also spoke out at the meeting.
I think we're going to be treading on really thin water here if we start messing with this stuff. It's a real huge invasion of privacy.
Here's why the issue came up now. Recently, borough manager Deborah Schnabel employed the use of a drone to help enforce a land use issue. A lot of people weren't happy about that. Schnabel said she wanted to address the issue with an administrative policy.
As a manager, I felt it was a responsibility to address that by getting in front of the issue and just saying, oh, we should have a policy for how we would pursue or how we would guide, you know, to guide the administration if we ever had a need or a desire to employ drones in the future.
Schnabel wanted to be clear. She doesn't want to change borough code or establish a drone use program at the borough. The policy wouldn't dictate how Haines residents can use the crafts. It would only guide the borough administration's use of the technology. Schnabel says she sees drones as a tool that could be used for a variety of reasons. The policy includes search and rescue and gathering evidence and documentation after crimes and accidents. Schnabel's draft policy also points to possible drone use for helping people like engineers, land surveyors, and land use planners gain aerial perspective. It also names assisting incident command staff and first responders as a potential use. Resident Mike Danker is a commercial pilot who owns and has operated drones. He said he thinks the policy could get the borough into legal trouble.
I believe the potential legal exposure for a misadventure into this frontier would far exceed any public benefit the policy offers at this time. So I would urge you to slow down, put this policy to the committee, and let it be fully vetted.
The Assembly didn't have a whole lot of love for it either, questioning whether a policy is necessary, called for, and whether the borough should be using drones as a tool at all. Assemblyman Tom Morfitt suggested sending the document to committee. But Brenda Josephson said it should just be taken off the table.
I think it would be better to just shelve the drone policy. The policy is we don't use drones.
Sean Mady said they shouldn't discount the use of the technology, but he said it should only be used with the permission of landowners.
I would move that we pass ordinance to only use drones with the express written permission and presence of the landowner, who also gets copies of any pictures taken.
Morfitt said he could see drones being useful for search and rescue and public safety emergencies, but he questioned whether a borough administrative policy is necessary for these uses.
In extreme situations, we might want to use a drone when other remedies fail, and I'm not convinced that there's never a situation where a drone would be advisable. I think it obviously should be a very last resort remedy.
The Assembly did not move the policy forward. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
It's not just leaders in Haines who are looking skyward. The Anchorage Police Department wants to add drones to its toolkit, but elected officials have some concerns. At a meeting of the Assembly's Public Safety Committee today, Captain Kevin Vandergriff presented draft policies on how police would like to use drones in Anchorage.
Search and rescue will be a primary evidence collection for major crimes and major crime scenes like fatality traffic accidents, for example. Also for tactical applications when we're responding with the SWAT team for officer safety purposes. Those will be the three primary areas that we're interested in utilizing this technology for.
Vandergriff says that for core public safety functions like search and rescue or documenting the scene of traffic collisions, drones are more efficient than the existing methods, including humans. In its proposals, the department introduced a limited set of functions for drones. APD also laid out what they wouldn't be used for, like warrantless surveillance. Vandergriff says the idea for a limited rollout is to give the public time to acclimate.
We want to utilize this new technology in a very conservative manner, all the time, you know, getting feedback from the public on how they believe we're using the technology. We want to be transparent when we use it, let folks know how many times we fly, what we're flying for, so that we can put the public's mind at rest, if you will, that this technology is not being abused by their police department.
And the public is skeptical. According to survey results presented by APD, a slight majority of Americans polled do not trust police to use drones. Even though members of the Assembly were supportive of specific proposals, many said rules should come through new municipal regulations. Assembly Vice Chair Forrest Dunbar is a lawyer and says there are a number of privacy concerns that merit a slower, more comprehensive legislative approach to the municipality's drone policies.
I think we want to try to strike that balance between the legitimate concerns of law enforcement and the potential for this technology, but also the real worries about, privacy.
Dunbar expects the next step will be the Assembly working with the mayor's administration on an ordinance that will solicit public testimony before coming to a vote. In Alaska, conversations about land conservation often involve thousands of acres, hundreds of miles from the nearest city. But sometimes just a couple of acres can make all the difference. community members in Anchorage rallied together recently to help protect one of the most popular birding spots in the city. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell has the story.
Potter Marsh sits at the base of the Chugach Mountains. The burnt orange-colored grasses wrap around the glassy open water. This is one of the last places to freeze before winter, which is why so many birds come to visit.
We got standard ducks that you might call mallards, pintail, green-winged teal. There's snow geese. There's the Canada geese. Sandhill cranes come through here.
Joe Meehan is with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The season, it's past now, but a video from the spring migration shows two of those sandhill cranes tilting their redheads back and opening their beaks wide. It's sites like this that Meehan says attract more than 150,000 visitors each year to Potter Marsh. But those visitors, they probably don't know that in the woods around the marsh, there's junk. Big cast iron boilers, stacks of sheet metal, a toilet or two, and a seemingly endless supply of bathtubs. There used to be an old airstrip here, so Meehan says the junk, it just started piling up.
These appliances, John, I think there's some old beat up vehicle frames here somewhere.
I don't know what the vehicle frames were. There's the outboard motor was back there.
Meehan is here today with John Ross from the Conservation Fund. All the trash here, it's unsettling, but there's an even bigger threat. It turns out all around the marsh is private land. Ross says until recently, there was a fear the land could be turned into condos.
You know, part of the ambiance is that there's not somebody's house here. You know, you're coming in and it's this kind of wooded, marshy environment rather than development.
Fish and Game didn't have the money to buy the land, so the Conservation Fund stepped in to help. The current property owners agreed to lower the price, and private donors also stepped up to secure the sale. Joe Meehan says people in Anchorage, they have a real connection to the place.
There was one gentleman who walked the marsh almost every day with his wife who had cancer, and she eventually passed away. And so for the last few months of her life, it was spent at Potter Marsh, and it was just a special place for him, and he wanted to see it protected, and so he was interested in helping protect it.
Meehan says before the sale was finalized, a crew hauled away nearly 20 tons of trash and another 50 tons of recycled steel. Now Fish and Game will make sure Potter Marsh and the land around it stays wild. After all, Meehan says that's the way the community wanted it. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
A former commander of the Fairbanks Detachment of the Alaska State Troopers has died in prison while serving a sentence for sexual abuse of a minor. The State Department of Corrections says 79-year-old Warren Tanner died Tuesday in a prison near Anchorage. Tanner's body was sent to the state medical examiner's office to determine the cause of death. The department says there were no immediate signs of foul play. Corrections spokeswoman Megan Edge declined to say whether Tanner had been ill, citing health privacy rules. The Fairbanks Daily News Minor reports Tanner pleaded guilty in 2015 to two counts of felony second-degree sexual abuse of a minor. Tanner commanded the Fairbanks Trooper Detachment from 1997 until 1999 when he retired. He previously was the Provost Marshal at Fort Wainwright. Alaska Airlines is saying adios to Cuba. The Seattle-based airline announced Tuesday it will discontinue flights to Havana after the holidays. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports.
Alaska Airlines joins a parade of other U.S. carriers who are trimming back flights to Cuba or dropping service entirely. Alaska Vice President John Kirby noticed weakening demand, and then the Trump administration reversed President Obama's liberalization on Cuba travel visas.
Looking at the precipitous drop-off in bookings, coupled with the fact that 80% of our traffic can no longer take advantage of that people-to-people education option, we just felt that there were better opportunities for us.
Alaska Airlines launched service from Seattle to Los Angeles to Havana and back with much fanfare last January. Alaska's last flight to Havana will depart this coming January 22nd, meaning the service to Cuba lasted just over 1 year. The U.S. Treasury Department last week reimposed Cuba travel rules that basically make Americans join expensive group tours or have a valid business exemption. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
The Alcoholic Beverage Control Board on Monday awarded Cesari Musinski, Bethel's third and final package store, liquor license. But the date for opening of the Cusco Liquor may be months away. KYUK's municipal reporter Christine Trudeau reports the board decided between three applications for the license, including Musinski's, Alaska Commercial Company, and Tundra Liquor Cash.
We have a motion to approve 5533 package store new license application. Anyone opposed? Seeing and hearing none, motion is granted.
With that, ABC Board Chair Bob Klein on Monday wrapped up a quick vote of the board after considering all the evidence before them. During the meeting, the board considered three applications and rejected two of them, the Alaska Commercial Company's second liquor store and Steve Chung's Tundra Liquor Cash. The city protested both applications after Bethel residents and the City Planning Commission raised concerns, mainly about safety. Legal representative with AC's parent company, Aaron Spurbeck, said AC was prepared to add more safety protocols.
If that's what the community needs, which we understand alcohol is a problem, but we're in a position to be good stewards in the community.
Bethel City Attorney Patty Burley spoke on behalf of the city at the ABC meeting. She says for the city of Bethel, it was too little, too late. And the city had concerns about bringing those safety issues to another neighborhood.
So Bethel said, you're not it. You're not the responsible steward. And they upheld their protest.
Musinski tentatively plans to open Cusco Liquor in either the spring or summer of 2018. The shop is on the waterfront where Cesari's Auto Body and Paint is located. I'm Christine Trudeau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harbaugh, Zachariah Hughes, and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Abby Collins in Haines, Tom Bonsi in Spokane, and Christine Trudeau in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Public Media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.